Everyone, welcome to another Your Amigos podcast. Tom and I are here with Rahul Agarwal from UCSF for a Paper of the Month podcast. Rahul, you had an interesting publication recently on giving sort of a single dose of lutetium as, I guess, sort of an immune priming dose followed by pembrolizumab. It was sort of phase one study, but with some efficacy results as well. So if you don't mind, let's start. Just introduce yourself briefly and then give us sort of the background and rationale for the study.
Sure. Hi. Hi, Brian. Thank you. Yes. Great to be here. And my name is Rahul Agarwal. I'm a professor of medicine at University of California, San Francisco, and medical oncologist, and worked with Tom Hope, one of our nuclear medicine physicians, and Larry Fong, one of our immune translational scientists, on the design of the study, which was, as you said, to deliver a single dose of lutetium as a priming, followed by maintenance pembrolizumab in patients with metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer. And the rationale is really building on some of the preclinical and clinical data with immune priming with various forms of radiation, predominantly external beam radiation in terms of preclinical models, as well as the prior clinical trials with, for example, with ipilimumab that shows that there may be a potential benefit in a subset of patients where we give this priming effect. So we designed the study to really test that question with a new form of radiation in the form of targeted radioligand therapy.
Can I kind of challenge you a little bit on the radiation? I know there's been, you mentioned the sort of the IPI studies. I think this goes back a pretty long way, if I remember, sort of that priming radiation effect in immune therapy and subset who's that benefits. Are there any clinical data that's the case, or is it more preclinical?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the preponderance of the data, I'd say, at least in prostate cancer, is preclinical. We have some, you know, unpublished data with not just external beam, but actually looking at radioligand therapy, both beta and alpha particle, in the form of, you know, priming an immune response and increasing immune effectors within the tumor and microenvironment. You know, I would say that clinically, you know, although the ipilimumab trial was a negative trial, you know, there did appear to be a tail on the curve of that study and some patients that did achieve long-term benefit and durable survival. So I think, you know, from my mind, the jury's still out in terms of whether you can, you know, achieve better effects with immune priming with radiation as compared to doing, you know, checkpoint inhibition alone.
And you use different schedules, sort of different timing. So maybe just describe the design and why the rationale to use those different schedules or timing.
Yeah, exactly. So we chose to test in the sort of quote unquote phase one schedule finding or part A portion of the study, really three different schedules, really just trying to get some preliminary data on any differences we might see with respect to the dose of radioligand therapy. So schedule one was really giving lutetium first, followed by pembrolizumab a few weeks later. Schedule two is really giving concomitantly on cycle one, day one. And then schedule three, we actually looked at starting the pembrolizumab first, followed by the radiation priming with the lutetium. The preclinical data would suggest that, you know, priming first, followed by the immunotherapy may achieve the best effect, but we didn't really know that with the clinical data. So small numbers of patients, we enrolled six patients per schedule. We're still in the process of trying to analyze some of the paired biopsies from this study, which I think will be an important immune correlate that wasn't included in the paper, but, you know, overall gave us some initial data with each of the schedules in the first part of the study.
So how did you decide which schedule to move forward? Was it then based on clinical data?
Yeah, it was really based on clinical data. You know, overall safety was actually quite, you know, the combination was well tolerated across all three schedules, but in schedule one, you know, there was no grade three events, no SAEs. It was a very clean safety profile. So that was one aspect. And then from a practical standpoint, you know, this was, this trial was conducted in a time where it was not easy to acquire and schedule patients for lutetium treatment. This was pre, FDA approval. And so from a logistic standpoint, scheduling that lutetium dose and then building a treatment schedule on the back of that, just, a lot easier. And so that was certainly fed into the decision to further evaluate schedule one in the part B of the study.
Rahul, with hindsight, do you reckon these three separate approaches, do you reckon you're any wiser to which is the better? Or would it have been easier just to kind of do it together as you had? Because I think that's what you did in the end. You just said, look, there's no difference between the three. This is the one I fancy. Let's go with it. With hindsight, do you think that would have been more time effective?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it's a single dose, you know, whether you give that followed by pembrolizumab versus just give them both on the first day, you know, probably not a huge difference in terms of just logistics and practicality. Either way, the pembrolizumab is being given sort of at subsequent fixed intervals of time. One of the nice things about Schedule One that from a correlative standpoint that we're in the process of analyzing is we can isolate, you know, what is the immunogenic impact of that dose of radioligand therapy without pembrolizumab on board. So the paired biopsies that we collected in Schedule One are pre-lutetium, post-lutetium, and then the patients start pembrolizumab. So we're really looking to see what type of data we get out of that analysis and correlating with clinical outcomes. Clinically, in terms of what moved forward, I would say we still don't, you know, we need larger numbers of patients to really know what's the optimal schedule and timing if this combination were to move forward.
Are there any data on immune effects of lutetium? I'm not aware of any, but you may know better, whether it's one dose or six doses.
We, as part of a PCF challenge grant, you know, this sort of helps support this trial, but also some of the preclinical studies. So we haven't published the data yet, but one of our radiochemists here at UCSF, Michael Evans, has been doing a lot of the preclinical work with various models looking at different forms of radioligand therapy, so lutetium, PSMA, actinium, and then comparing to external beam radiation. And I'd say preliminarily looks like, you know, we do see a better priming effect with the radioligands. Don't know yet in terms of the alpha versus beta particle. So I think preclinically, there's certainly data. In the trial, you know, the results we published in Lancet Oncology, we did look at peripheral whole blood CyTOF immune profiling and tried to look at responders versus non-responders. And we do see some differences in immune cell subsets in the responders showing, you know, higher proportions or frequency of immune effectors and a decrease in myelosuppressive type cells in the responders versus non-responders. So that was the main correlative data from an IO perspective that we included in the paper. So it's not definitive, but I think it gives some hint that in the patients that are going to benefit, there may be some differences in the...
Rahul, one of the favorite topics, one of our favorite topics on this show is about endpoints in prostate cancer. and particularly endpoints in phase two trials in prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. And there was a bit of, you know, jiggery pokery with PSA 90 and, you know, what was, of course, it had a phase one component. What was the primary endpoint, efficacy endpoint of this trial? And I guess one of the questions would be, what would one single dose of a lutetium do by itself?
Yeah, I think both the first part of the question. So objective response rate was the primary endpoint of the study, and we selected only patients that had measurable disease by RECIST. For that reason. So we wanted to look at ORR as really the primary efficacy endpoint. And that's, you know, the way that the manuscript is structured. PSA 50, PSA 90, median RPFS are all secondary efficacy endpoints. And I think that is one of the strengths is that we're really able to look at, you know, what's the soft tissue response and duration of response, as well as on a per lesion basis and the measurable soft tissue, you know, what's the correlation between baseline PSMA PET uptake with response on an individual lesion basis. In terms of the second part of the question, I think that's the big unknown here is what would happen with a single dose of lutetium. This was a non-randomized study, so the individual contribution of pembrolizumab versus that single dose of lutetium we can't answer from our study. We have had some extremely durable responses on this study, and we still have several patients that haven't progressed after a couple years of that single priming dose followed by pembrolizumab. So I think either there's just extreme sensitivity to lutetium or, you know, we do think there's a potential impact of the pembrolizumab.
And your response was 56%, correct, in your part B, the objective. So I guess that certainly seems higher than pembro alone. I mean, right, I don't think probably much higher than pembro alone. There's no real lutetium data for a single dose.
That PSA 4 study that came out recently, Oliver Sartor's study, that was early castrate resistant prostate cancer too. What was the response rate in for the 6 cycles or lutetium in that study?
Off the top of my head, I don't know the exact number. I think it was in the 40-50% range. It was similar to the Vision trial. I don't think it was substantially higher, which was one of the things that sort of came out of that study.
So 6 cycle is not that – so the 6 cycle response rate is in the same ballpark as your response rate in 1 cycle. And we don't really know how many cycles is optimal. But do most people in your field, you know, feel that one cycle is inadequate? Or have you actually just showed that one cycle might be enough?
Yeah, I don't think
the intent of our response.
Yeah, I don't think the intent of our trial was just to make the point that one cycle is enough. I think it's really the immune priming effect. You know, in fact, the follow-on study that we're doing, that we're just about to start enrolling, is lutetium with pembrolizumab with repeated doses of lutetium, but at adaptive dosing design based on the, you know, PSA response and PSA kinetics, and trying to space out the doses of lutetium to sort of enhance the durability of the response. I think it's also hard to compare across trials because our study, by virtue of requiring measurable disease, you may have a pretty high percentage of patients with visceral metastases. I think it was 30% in our trial. And we use a more sort of less stringent selection criteria. So PSMA low or PSMA negative lesions, you could have those and still enroll on our study. So really tough to compare across trials. It's just, you know, very, very different design.
Rahul, could you talk about that PSMA PET criteria and how yours differed from the VISION trial?
Yeah, so we used it pretty broad. You just had to have three or more PET positive lesions. Initially, when we first designed the study, there weren't really the set sort of promised criteria in terms of how to define positive PET lesions. So initially, we used lesions above background mediastinal blood pool, and then that was amended during the course of the study to require uptake greater than background liver. As per standard criteria. We'd never included, though, intentionally, we did not include criteria about excluding patients who had one or more PET negative soft tissue lesions, sort of the VISION criteria and PSMA-4 criteria. We did not utilize those intentionally because we're giving a combination here with the pembrolizumab.
And Rahul, there's a sentence in here, I'm not sure that I'm interpreting it correctly. You say, 91 evaluable soft tissue lesions, baseline maximum SUV negatively correlated with percent change in target lesions. I would think it would be the opposite, or does that reinforce your hypothesis that this really isn't lutetium treatment, it's just priming and then it's pembro treatment?
Yeah, the negative correlation refers to the percent change from baseline in the size of the lesion, right? So if you look at the figure, you get a greater reduction in size with a higher baseline PET uptake. Okay. So hence negative correlation. However, there was a subset, and we looked at lesions with less uptake, and of those, I think about 30% still did show pretty significant shrinkage. So if you look at the plot, there's these group of lesions that have relatively low PET uptake that still had significant shrinkage. You know, again, not conclusive, but argues there may be something to the combination with the contribution of the pembrolizumab.
And so where from here? You mentioned some paired bias.
Can we go there? Can we talk about side effects? Can we talk about side effects?
Sure.
Just in terms of the adverse event profile, I read a lot about pembrolizumab, but it looks like there has been described some hematological toxicity with six cycles of lutetium. How do you feel the one cycle was tolerated, or was all the tox pembro dominated?
Yeah, the single dose of lutetium was tolerated very well, and we had very little in the way of hematologic toxicity, you know, as you might expect if you're just giving one cycle of radioligand therapy. And we didn't really see any sort of potentiation of immune-related AEs. There were a couple of grade 3 IR AEs. We had one case of pneumonitis and one case of inflammatory arthritis that rose to grade 3. But overall, I'd say the safety profile was quite good, and that sort of feeds into the rationale of, you know, if we're going to give lutetium, you know, can we pair it with something that allows us to space out the doses and lessen the hematologic toxicity that I think we all encounter when we give a fixed schedule? The caveat is these are pre-taxane mCRPC patients. So I think, again, hard to compare directly to the VISION study because these are less heavily pretreated patients. So that may also contribute to the less degree of hematologic tox we saw.
Rahul, Let's Go Crazy is my favorite Prince song. I'm going to hear what your favorite Prince song and Brian's is in a second. But you did talk about the Prince study in your discussion. Is Let's Go Crazy the best way to describe that study, or did it have some merit?
No, I think it's a great study. I think it's a very rational design. You're basically taking the standard dosing schema for lutetium, you know, fixed dosing Q6 weeks and combining with pembrolizumab. So I think it's a in some ways, our trial design is a little bit deviating more from kind of the traditional combination trial design, whereas there's,
you know, that's really 6 cycles of lutetium and pembrolizumab together, not one. And what did that study, what did that show?
So that study showed different patient populations. So again, cross trial comparison hard, as we made that point in the discussion. That was mostly post chemotherapy mCRPC. So more heavily pretreated, did get more doses of lutetium. Overall, the response rate and the PFS was a little bit higher than in our study. They use more stringent selection based on FDG and PSMA PET. So you're getting a cohort that's more enriched for higher levels of PSMA PET uptake at baseline. So I think all those factors contribute. Overall, I think the results were encouraging. You're seeing, you know, pretty durable activity in a group of patients that's pretty heavily pretreated. There was more hematologic toxicity, as you might expect, because you're giving up to 6 cycles of lutetium. So I think the two studies are very complementary. I think, you know, they're very different in design, but both trying to approach the question of combination radioimmunotherapy.
So Rahul, my favorite song is Kiss by Prince Tom, but can you envision a study where you kind of alluded to this, maybe give a dose of lutetium, maintenance pembro, and then if disease gets worse or PSA progression or whatever criteria, you give another dose or 2 doses, you know, kind of this alternating, you know, adaptive.
That's exactly what we're doing. So in our follow-on phase 2 study, we're doing a priming dose of lutetium, we're giving pembrolizumab, and then based on PSA kinetics, if PSA starts to rise prior to radiographic PD on conventional imaging, we give a second or a reprime dose of lutetium to really see if we can extend the duration of benefit and improve the median PFS that we saw on this current phase 1 study. So that's exactly what we're planning to do.
And those are just single doses of lutetium?
Single dose of lutetium, but multiple during the course of the patient's treatment.
One at a time.
Out intervals. Yeah.
Is there any reason to believe that a given patient or subset might need 2 doses to prime or 3 doses? Or?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, one of the things that fed into the design of this study is there too much? Can you give too much radiation and really start to see more immune ablative effects? And preclinically, you see that if you give, you know, frequent doses, fractions of radiation, you actually can see an increase in myelosuppressive cells within the, you know, tumor microenvironment. So I think we felt like we wanted to strike that balance of not necessarily, you know, overdoing it and causing that ablation with 2 doses sequentially.
Yeah. Rahul, is I don't want to be obsessive about Prince, but I can't help myself. is that the problem with the Prince trial? Is they're giving too much lutetium and actually that could be counterproductive? And if you had to take one of these 2 regimes forward in a randomized trial, I know it's probably premature to do that right now with all the history of immune therapy trials in prostate cancer, but you had to, you're on a desert island, would you do the 6 cycles or would you do the 1 cycle?
I would go in between. I would take an approach that we're doing in our phase 2 study that I really do think that, I do think it's a reasonable hypothesis that there is such a thing as too much radiation with when you're combining with an IO. And I definitely have not seen any data to support that from Prince yet, so I don't want to sort of negatively speak about that trial. But I think one of the concerns is that, you know, do you get a ablative effect and over time with the sort of immune priming that you might achieve if you can space out the doses? So the way we're designing our phase 2 study, I'm hoping we see really robust PFS and long-term survival effects and durability of response, and that may be the kind of a path to take forward. Tough to design a phase 3 study immediately based on that, because you're playing with a couple of variables there, both the pembrolizumab and with adjusted dosing schema with the lutetium. But I think ultimately that may be the most successful path forward if there is one with this combination.
So Rahul, my last question, the toughest one. I mean, we've seen, first of all, congrats on the study and the paper. I mean, doing translational investigator-initiated trials is really difficult, right, with endpoints, et cetera. So for you and Larry and everybody, congrats. But, you know, we've seen big negative trials with pembro. We've seen immunotherapy kind of swing and miss. I mean, is there a future here? I mean, is there going to be a play? If you had to predict, call it 5 years from now, is there going to be an immune therapy-based approach that's a standard of care in prostate cancer?
I think we're headed that direction with this data and with the preclinical data. I think one of the key things we need to see from this study is the biopsy data and what's actually happening in the tumor microenvironment. If, you know, building that in along with the clinical data we're seeing here, I think does certainly support, you know, larger phase 2 and potentially phase three studies in a randomized type of trial format. I think one of the challenges with pembrolizumab and some of the other negative phase three studies is you really want that robust correlative translational piece to support the biology and the mechanism of action. And I think with radiation and radioligand therapy, we're building towards that in terms of the immune priming effect. So I'm not a betting person, but I am excited about the combination. And if we can build it on better science and smart trial design, then I think we have a better chance.
And Tom, I'll let you ask the last one. Let me just have one more quick follow-up. I was trying to make a joke about a Prince song, but I just couldn't come up with it. But any reason to maybe introduce Ipi into this? I mean, there's data about Ipi-Nivo, and, is there any thought to introduce that variable as well?
Well, I think the CTLA-4 blockade absolutely is a very interesting question. My understanding is there may be clinical trial data coming with CTLA-4 blockade in the context of radioligand therapy. So I think lots to look at. We are looking at that preclinically as well, and sort of different IO modulators and combined with different forms of radiation gets to be a lot of variables to play with all at the same time. But I think, that's a valid question to be asked clinically and preclinically.
I have When Doves Cry going round and round in my mind now. Rahul, does anyone think you're crazy? With all of the track record.
Probably.
Of all of the track record, all the disappointment, you're putting your academic career into this environment. I actually really like this, but I genuinely don't know how much one cycle is doing. I think the six cycles looks at the PRINT study looks a bit like Vision to me from a distance. I think your PMSA inclusion criteria, I agree, makes it likely that you've got a poorer population, although we don't know the exact detail of that biomarker anyway. And, you're investing a lot of, I think doing the sequential tissue is important. But do you think that with so many negative trials, including the Ipi priming trial with that radiotherapy dose that I agree did have a tail on the curve, and had the long follow-up been the primary endpoint, not sure that would have been a positive trial. So I'll give you of course, Cipu-Lucel-T, which is completely different, does have activity. But is there in the back of your mind, do you have sleepless nights saying, I'm going down the same route as these previous groups, and we're going to end up in 5 years' time with a big hazard ratio of 1.1 in a study? And what can you do to protect yourself from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think any clinical investigator is going to have the worry that what they're working on is ultimately not going to pan out. Most of what we do doesn't lead to FDA approvals, but that isn't to say that we shouldn't be investigating it when it's based on good science and we can design our trials in a smart way. So thus far, I've been very encouraged about the combination, and I don't think that with pembrolizumab and the negative phase three trials, those are completely different partners, different patient populations, different modalities of action. So I don't think we should, paint too broad a stroke here in terms of just saying, well, IO doesn't work in prostate cancer. And, I think there's still a lot of opportunities there, and not just with checkpoint inhibitors, but with some of the newer IO agents as well, where we're seeing some promising results. So I'm excited about the general area. Where we'll be in 5 years, don't know. I'd love to see us in the context of a phase three trial based on good science and showing a positive result, but still a lot of work to get there for sure.
We did some really interesting work recently with some podcasts that I thought was really interesting. I was doing it from an airport lounge just after ESMO. There was an ESMO presentation looking at with Dr. Kelly. I'm looking for the, I can't remember the name of the drug, Brian.
AMG 509, the steep one.
Yeah, AMG 509, I couldn't remember at all. Does AMG 509 have a role to play in this picture? Is there a triplet therapy out there?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'd love to see something like that. I really like the idea of dual antigen targeting with PSMA and STEAP1. I think you see a lot of heterogeneity in mCRPC. And even when we get our PSMA PET scans, we see that in terms of the variable levels of uptake within a given patient. So I do think that dual antigen targeting in the context of, IO therapy and radioligand therapy, it'd be great to see some movement in that direction. We still have a ways to go. 509 is still a new drug, and we're still learning, how to give it safely.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like we haven't yet closed this chapter on immune therapy and prostate cancer. It sounds to me there are two interesting podcasts we've done in this environment just recently. Rahul, it's fabulous work. Congratulations on your publication in Lancet Oncology. Very, very difficult thing to do, especially for investigating this shared work. Last, of course, do you have a favorite Prince song?
My favorite Prince song is probably Purple Rain.
You can't go wrong with that. And, it's a great place to end. It's a great place to end.
Sing a few bars. We could hang on a minute.
I grew up in Minnesota, so Prince is a hometown guy. Yeah.
Fabulous. Congrats. A legend. Absolute legend.
Take care.
Right, nice to chat. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.